Coming up on Golf Today, Cam Smith meets the media today outside of Boston as he begins his career as a Live Series golfer. What will he say about the reasons for the move and his missing out on the President's Cup? And what were the moments this season that made us laugh, cry, and stand up and cheer? We hand out some season superlatives for the year that was. And big hitting Chris Goddard stops by to talk about competing in the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, trying to chase down PGA Tour employment. Nice work if you can get it. Settle in. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Golf Today on a Wednesday. Damon Mack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. Has a year ever had more statements and memos and social media goodbyes than this one?
A lot of those guys who made their social media goodbye heading out the front door, Damon, have since started to sue to try to come back in the back door as well. We've certainly had a lot of lowlights outside the ropes, but thankfully there's been quite a few highlights inside the ropes this year.
Some great golf inside the ropes. How about a little season rewind, 2021-22, what we saw, what we loved and enjoyed. We begin with Max Homa, Fortinet Championship, out in California last September, taking the season opener, one-shot win over Maverick McNealy, at the time his third PGA Tour win.
And then fast forward to February, Scottie Scheffler notched his first career victory at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, beating Patrick Cantlay in a playoff. And from this point on, the floodgates were open for Scottie Scheffler.
That reaction. We had no idea what was coming, did we? Man, look at that crowd, that moment for him. What a season that it was for the young man from Texas. And also, big storyline this season, someone was pushing Scottie Scheffler for Player of the Year. Cameron Smith made his mark in March, winning the Players' Championship. 66 in the final round. That Monday finish, beating Anibal Lahiri by one shot. Made 10 birdies in the final round, tied for the most ever in one round in the Players at TPC Sawgrass, the flagship event of the PGA Tour.
Now is the chance to be Player of the Year on another tour. The Masters was won by Scottie Scheffler. His win at Augusta was his fourth victory in six events. He beat Rory McIlroy by three shots to earn that green jacket and cemented himself in the top spot of the world rankings.
Woke up that Sunday not sure if he was up for the task, and he was more than up for it. His first major championship. How about a second major title, though, for one Justin Thomas? PGA Championship Southern Hills began the final round seven shots back of Mito Pereira. Shot 67 while Pereira double bogeyed the 18th hole, you recall, and shot 75. Then he went on to beat Will Zalatoris in a three-hole aggregate playoff. Second Wanamaker Trophy and first win since the 2021 Players.
Matt Fitzpatrick finished tied fifth back then at Southern Hills, two shots behind Thomas, but he ended up at the top of the leaderboard in the U.S. Open at Brookline. His second shot we see here from the fairway bunker in 18 will be replayed for years to come. He two-putted from there and beat Will Zalatoris and Scottie Scheffler by a single shot. And after seven wins on the DP World Tour, Fitzpatrick finally earned his first on the PGA Tour.
What a moment that it was. And in July, got to give it to Cam Smith at the Old Course, perhaps one of the great final rounds that we've seen in a major. Final round 64, storming past Rory McIlroy. Rory didn't make any mistakes, shot a bogey-free 70, but Smith just too good on that Sunday, able to kiss the claret jug.
And someone else who was too good on a Sunday, it's now Sunday at Eastlake. Rory McIlroy rallied from six shots back in the final round 66 to win the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup. The victory marked the largest final round comeback in Tour Championship history. Rory became the first player to win three FedEx Cups, 2016, 2019, 2022. And the only other player with multiple FedEx Cup titles, Tiger Woods.
2016, 19, and 2022 for Rory. So how about a closer look kind of inside the numbers? Eamon, 47 events, 33 different winners, 12 international players won 17 of the events, 18 players in their 20s won 28 events. He had one player in his 40s. That was Chez Reavie. In the Barracuda, then you had 13 first-timers, a couple rookies, and there were eight playoffs this season, which provided a lot of drama as well. So how about some season superlatives on this past season? Maybe the most resilient playing. Remember that yearbook in the States, the yearbook, you know, most likely to succeed. This is most resilient of the past season.
I'm inclined to agree with our guest yesterday, Paul McGinley, because we remember Paul tweeted a couple of days ago about Rory McIlroy's victory at Eastlake, and he used the hashtag resilient. You see the tweet here.
Nice.
And his congratulations to Rory. And to me, it was a matter of resilience there, because Rory's year to me was defined by distractions and disappointments. And the distractions have been, you know, a subject of discussion on the show all year long. It's the role that he's taken on outside of the ropes in terms of being an advocate for the PGA Tour, a defender of the PGA Tour, constantly asked to defend and advocate for the PGA Tour in this battle with LIV Golf. And that takes up an enormous amount of time, and would do so even if he wasn't also on the board of the PGA Tour as well. So he's involved in the administration even outside of the advocacy for it. And then the disappointments, you know, St. Andrews, I think, burned him a lot. I think Southern Hills burned him quite a bit because, you know, Justin Thomas won the PGA Championship at 5 under par on Sunday night. Rory McIlroy was 6 under par late morning Thursday and then just hit neutral and eventually reverse from there. And I think that one probably hurt him as well. You know, McGinley made this point, he comes back from valleys to highs pretty quickly because he then turned around and won the Canadian Open a couple of weeks later. But I think it was a year where Rory McIlroy would have had every excuse built in for not accomplishing a great deal on the golf course. He did accomplish a great deal on the golf course, and he proved that on Sunday. To me, that was just a real sign of the resilience and grit that he probably doesn't... Maybe it didn't exist earlier in his career. Maybe he didn't need it because he was... Rory's trajectory was upward all the time. Now that kind of career and life's gotten a little bit more complicated, he's often been accused of not having that ability to put his head down and grind his way through it. I think this year proved something a little bit different.
Yeah, played incredible golf while defending the PGA Tour, as it were. Will Zalatoris had to defend his putter and the criticism of that. So he's my resilient player of this past season, kind of how he dealt with that as a young player who continued to find himself in contention at the biggest events of the year and had a chance to check that box as a winner on the PGA Tour back in the winter. This putt to win at Torrey Pines. And look at the reaction for him and the crowd. And right away, Eamon, the criticism starts. Golf Magic, the headline. Will Zalatoris shows us the good, the bad, and the ugly, despite shooting 65. So the storyline continues. U.S. Open, Brookline, Country Club, getting that playoff with Matt Fitzpatrick. After the round, he's asked endlessly about the pressure. How do these runner-ups feel? Do they sting? Near misses? What's your mental process? Time and again asked about the most important club in the bag. And then finally, in that playoff, Memphis able to get it done. And the XL even before that, you know, the big putt in regulation, what are they going to say now? And Zalatoris able to get that first win in his 56th PGA Tour start, despite all the questions for a young player who's supposed to be this closer and supposed to be this major championship whisperer, showing some big-time play in the playoffs.
And he might actually be next year's resilient guy as well, because he's now obviously had a withdrawal when he had a great chance of winning the FedEx Cup, had multiple herniated discs in his back, and that's knocked him out for the foreseeable future, certainly out of the playoffs and the President's Cup. I totally agree with you on that, because he's, for the amount of scrutiny Will Zalatoris has been under, there's this great dichotomy with him. He gets so much criticism for the putting, and frequently some of it's deserved, but he probably doesn't get enough credit for the manner in which he deals with it. Because you don't see him throwing temper tantrums or getting surly in press conferences. He's asked a question, he addresses it. He found a weakness in his game, he's tried to address that. He's also turned his attention to being an advocate against LIV Golf as well during the course of this year, which no other player of his youth and inexperience on the tour has actually done. He stepped into that role quite vocally as well. I would totally get the idea that he is a resilient character. He's shown it in terms of what he's put up with, the expectations that were heaped on him so early in his career. But that's what happens when you've been runner-up in multiple major championships.
He's handled it very, very well. How about a surprise? Biggest surprise from this past season?
To me, it's Tiger. And not even focusing on Tiger inside the ropes. It's Tiger outside the ropes. You know, we had a commemoration earlier this week, 26 years since he turned professional. And for those 26 years, Tiger Woods has steadfastly avoided being cast into anyone's fight that wasn't his. He didn't take a role or stand on any issues that came up in golf or outside of golf. It was something he was uncomfortable with, didn't want to do. We've seen it happen this year for the first time, and he's been quite vocal. And it started really at the Open Championship, his press conference there, where he made the argument compelling against LIV Golf, didn't understand why some players would make that move. And he made clear that, essentially, I'm the standard here. I've set the benchmark that you guys are going to be judged against. So don't tell me you're running away to hit and giggle golf and expect me to take it seriously. And I was quite struck by just how vocal he has been. And then flying up for that players' meeting at Wilmington in the tournament that he wasn't playing. That's not something the old Tiger Woods did.
He mentions no words about how he views competitive golf and what is important and what it matters in this time. But for me, I am going to go inside the ropes. Just the surprise of seeing him at Augusta National, the surprise of him able to compete in three of the four major championships despite what happened in the winter of 2021 with that car accident, and the reminder of what he still means to the game of golf, and seeing the gallery and the fans and the patrons at Augusta, as it were, come out in droves as if it was the year 2000 all over again. He could be 66 years old. It's much like Jack and much like Arnie. When Tiger Woods is on property, whether he's walking tall or having a little bit of a limp, he still commands the stage like no one in the game.
He could also be your resilient character in that sense as well.
I mean, exactly right.
That's the thing about Tiger. There's no shortage of surprises, no shortage of resilience either. But speaking of people who've been in the public eye for a very long time for their golf, Alexis Pano has been in the public eye since she was a child. Now she's on the verge of getting her LPGA Tour card for next season. She stops by the show right after the break.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And WinGrips, the best grips in golf. And by Zexio. Experience light, experience easy. Zexio, experience the difference.
Back on Golf Today, back in April, then 17-year-old standout Alexa Pano made the cut at the Augusta National Women's Amateur, ultimately finishing the week in a tie for 12th, displaying some fantastic golf. And then following the accomplishment, she announced she would turn professional, as she had already secured Epson Tour status thanks to her tie for 10th finish in Stage 2 of 2021 LPGA Q School. She went on to make her 2022 Epson Tour debut at the Cooper Rock Championship in Utah, and she has since had fantastic success so far. A couple of runner-up finishes, five total top tens, including a solo third last week. Currently seventh on the money list, top 10 at the end of the season, earned LPGA Tour cards. Welcome in, Alexa Pano, on this Wednesday. Exciting already for a young person who just turned 18, so happy belated birthday. How'd you celebrate? Food, dessert, friends?
Yeah, so I was lucky to have it on an off week the day before a travel day, so I practiced that morning, hung out at the beach, and then celebrated with my family with some cake, so.
Alexa, you've excelled at every level since childhood in this game. When you move up a level, as you've now done to the Epson Tour, do you look around you and see players who have tools that you don't have? And does it elevate you each time, or do you feel more comfortable with each level that you get up?
Yeah, I think every level that I'm adapting to, I'm learning so much. And since turning pro, I've learned so much about my golf game and just about the professional life. But I think that's what I enjoy, is like the challenge of the next level every time and adapting and learning in everything that I do.
Well, for a lot of folks, you came to the golf public eye in the documentary The Short Game. I loved it. You, Amari Avery, youngsters at Pinehurst. How did that experience kind of shape you and prepare you for the public eye of professional golf?
Yeah, I think a lot of it was learning to deal with nerves, and also I was lucky enough to be in front of a camera at a young age, so I don't really get nervous when that happens. And yeah, having the attention on me at a young age definitely matured me pretty quickly, which is something you definitely need in this game, especially in the professional world.
Alexa, you're so close now to the LPGA Tour card. You've played your first LPGA Tour event when you were 13 years old. You're still only 18, but does it feel like a long road in a way that to get to this point?
Yeah, I feel like I was very lucky as an amateur golfer to get so much experience on the professional level in LPGA and Epson. So it made the transition feel a lot easier. But it definitely felt a long time coming when I finally was able to turn professional and play in my first event as a professional.
Alexa, can you clear something up for me? Back in June, the New England Patriots website wrote an article on you about the Pats logo that was on your bag. What's this tie to the New England Patriots, one of the great organizations in the National Football League?
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, the greatest sports or greatest NFL organization, but I've been a longtime fan as my dad's been a season ticket holder for forever, and it has so many ties with my family, even back when I was in junior golf, they're barely starting. And so it just felt right to have that on my golf bag at the US Open. And since then, the organization has shown me so much support. I even got to go when I was staying with family in New England, visit the Patriots and their trophy room and meet everyone there. And there's definitely a lot of fun stuff coming soon with the Patriots. Coming soon.
Oh. Now, Alexa, we can't actually remember when we were 18 years old, but what we do know is that our vision at that point was pretty short term. If we asked you where you would expect to be a year from now when you turn 19, what would your answer be?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm hoping to be playing on the LPGA Tour at that point, but I really am itching for my first professional win, so I'm hoping by 19 I will have my first professional win.
It's a great goal to have. Wishing you great success. Many wins for you. Many wins for your New England Patriots as football season begins. And we'll speak to you down the road.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
All right, great to have Alexa with us. Welcome in our good friend, PointsBet senior editor, Teddy Greenstein. Great to see you, buddy. Rory's win on Sunday marked the largest final round comeback in Tour Championship history. On that note, what were some of the other most stunning golf betting results from the season?
Yeah, it was a great year for Rory. It was also a great year for you, Damon, since you're the only sharp among the three of us. So we're going to look back at some of the highlights from golf betting this year. There were certainly some heroes and some heartbreak. And let's start with JT, Justin Thomas, at the PGA Championship. And as you can see, he was 14-1 heading in, certainly one of the favorites. And then 33-1 heading into Sunday, trailed by 8 shots with 10 to play. And then thanks for a little help from Mito, who hit it in the water on 18. Justin then went from plus 500 and went on to win. And now let's fast forward to Tom Kim at the Wyndham. The Tom Kim train was in full effect. And what's wild here is that he went from 40-1 at the start of Thursday and then opened with the quad. So he was 125-1. Kind of reminds me of Phil Mickelson at the PGA Championship last year when he was 300. And then he really turned it on, got the Jets going 5-1 starting Sunday, and then took command with that front 9-27. And then, of course, Rory at the Players. That was absolutely glorious, especially if you had some money on him. 8-1 pre-tournament, certainly a favorite there among them, certainly. And then he opened with a triple, right? I mean, he hit it out of balance, so he was 22-1. And then he had a fighting chance going into Sunday. I thought the odds would have been 6 or 7-1, but he was plus 340. Clearly, our traders did not think Scottie Scheffler was as automatic as maybe I would have thought.
I thought opening with triples and quads is only good if you're a figure skater, but apparently it's good in golf now as well. Teddy, it's never too early to look ahead. So let's examine the majors 2023. What players do you have your eyes on?
Yeah, Eamon, I think I'm dressed appropriately for the occasion. We're already thinking about the Masters even in August as it is. But, when we talk about the Masters, Rory is the favorite here. And you can see that number. Rory is also a dominant favorite at the Open Championship at Liverpool. They're just 8-1, very, very low number. JT is a favorite or co-favorite at the PGA Championship at Oak Hill and at the U.S. Open, which will be at LACC. So those are some interesting ones. And then I focused on a couple players because I want to highlight the differences in the courses here. So Scottie Scheffler and Jordan Spieth, you can see some differences there. Certainly nothing between the Masters and the PGA, but then when you get to the U.S. Open, there's certainly some skepticism of Jordan Spieth that he's going to be able to win the Open. And then the Open Championship, you see there, you know, a lower number for Jordan plus 1800 and Scottie Scheffler pretty consistent across the board. So I guess when it comes to Spieth, there's still not a ton of faith he's going to be able to hit those tight fairways.
Wow. Teddy, we haven't even reached Labor Day yet, but give us some your major boosts for next year.
Yeah. And by the way, so we have a couple of fun things. We also have an offering where you can bet on any player just to win a major. So that's going to be an option too. Like Rory's at plus 225, Will Zalatoris plus 400, Patrick Cantlay, my pick, at plus 650, and Tiger's 35-1 to win any major next year. But we do have some boosts. And, you know, a couple years ago, John Rahm finished top 10 in all four majors. And this year, Rory did it. So I asked the traders to price that up. What are the odds that Rory McIlroy is going to finish in the top 10 in all four majors in 2023? And that has been boosted to plus 1,600, 16-1. Yeah. It was 25-1 for John Rahm this year, and he did not come through. So hopefully Rory can, and he can pay off that bet. And then I was really curious about Tiger just to finish top 10 at any of the majors. And that one has been priced at plus 150. So I thought it was going to be a little higher at that price. I think I'm going to lay off it. Although maybe if Tiger is playing well heading into Augusta, I will not be able to resist. I think we'll all be so excited if he plays well at the PNC and if he plays well at March. We're going to believe again that Tiger is going to play well at the Masters.
Rory and Tiger, two of the most popular players in the game, or so I've heard.
Well, I'm actually impressed that the odds are that good on Tiger finishing top 10 in a major. But then again, he's got a lot of institutional knowledge at Augusta National and at Hoylake for next year.
Absolutely. Teddy, we appreciate it, pal. Listen, I know you've had some travel woes. It's always good to catch up with you. We'll speak to you soon.
Awesome, guys. Have a great afternoon.
You're on the doorstep, Chris, to securing a PGA Tour card. Currently T27 in the final standings, needing to get to the top 25. What's the mindset like one day away from the first round?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I've just been kind of trying to waste time and get ready for Thursday. Obviously, it's a big week coming up, and, I'm in the position where I have to play well in order for anything to happen. So I know what I got to go out there and do and just got to go do it.
How specific are you in knowing what you have to do, Chris? You're currently tied 27th, the top 25 obviously make it. Do you have a sense of where you would need to finish this week to make that leap?
No, I mean, I'm not too worried about that stuff. I know that if I go out there and play well, I'll get it done. And if not, I'll be doing something else, figuring out what I'm going to do. So I don't know. I'm not too worried about what the number is. I'm just going to go out there and try to play my best golf and see where I end up at the end of the week.
Chris, you win the Nicklaus and Haskins Awards as the best college golfer. You turn pro in June. How are you keeping things simple when life is happening so fast?
That's a good question. That's probably been the hardest part of, you know, my life since June. In college, everything was simple, to be honest. I had a schedule laid out. I had to follow that, and that was about it. Go play good golf. Out here, I'm on my own. Obviously, I have a great team around me, but it's been a hectic last, 14 weeks. I've played a lot of golf, and I'm hoping to finish it off strong here.
You've made 8 starts on the PGA Tour this year, Chris. You made 6 cuts. You've been in the top 10 twice, including that tied for 4th at the John Deere. So it's very obvious you can compete out there with the best players in the world. Does that make you more impatient to get out there? Does it put a little bit more pressure on you this week in that sense, knowing that you do actually belong out there?
You know, I don't think pressure is probably not the right word, but I think impatient is. You know, I know that when I'm at my best, I know I can play with the best. And I don't want to say I put any more pressure, because it's all going to work out how it's supposed to work out. If I got to take a year and you know, get better, then I'll do that. But if I, you know, can end up on the tour next year, that'd be great too. So I think impatient is probably the right word, and I've been working on trying to be as patient as possible with the process going on right now.
Chris, I want to speak to you player to player, big man to big man. Your length off the tee, it turns heads. Were you taught to swing hard, or is this just how you roll?
I think it's kind of, you know, a product of how I grew up. You know, I'm from the Northeast, and a lot of the courses at home are just kind of big golf courses, and you just got to hit it hard and hit it far. And, you know, I would definitely say when I was a kid growing up, I definitely didn't hit it as straight as I do now. So I definitely learned how to tighten it up a little bit. But yeah, I played lacrosse as a kid, and I think that really helped with my speed. And you know, I think it's just kind of, you know, one of those things that I kind of molded into what it is now, not on purpose really.
Chris, whenever he says big man to big man, he means that your 8-iron goes about as far as his driver. He left that part out.
It's true.
Chris, the PGA Tour University, which you took part in, it's announcing some changes to how it is going forward. There will be more cards given out to guys who graduate through that PGA Tour University. But we've also heard players on the PGA Tour talk about the need to get young talent on the tour faster. Is there an argument to be made of taking the top couple of best college players in the country and putting them directly onto the PGA Tour for a year?
Yes and no. I mean, obviously, you know, me and Pearson have had great summers, and he's earned a spot here and I've earned a spot here, and we've both done it really differently. But, you know, I will say that even though I've had some success on the tour, I would say a majority of kids probably aren't ready. Not that I'm ready either, but it's kind of unfair to skip a couple steps. I think you gotta earn your keep out here. And I think, you know, if you gave kids cards for the Korn Ferry, that'd be way better than, you know, just push them straight to the tour, because frankly, there's a lot of guys out here that deserve to be on the tour. And I think it would kind of be unfair to skip a couple steps when you still haven't really proved what you got.
In college, Chris, you had a team, teammates, coaches, the weight room attendants, folks that were kind of tending to you every day. Who's your team now as you make this next step as a professional?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point that you talked about. You know, you had a team, whether you liked it or not, you had a team. And now I have a team, but it's a different team. I got my caddy, I got my agent, I got my parents, I got, you know, I got my friends and family and stuff. They're all part of my team too. But it's definitely probably a smaller team, just because I really don't have, you know, the time that I did in school. To go to the gym and to go hang out with those people and make sure everything was in check. Now, you know, I got a couple of days and a couple of days to work, and then you got to get right to work Thursday through Sunday. So, yeah, it's a different team, but it's still really impactful in what I do.
Well, as a viewer and follower of this game, it's fun to watch you play, Chris. Congrats on all you've accomplished so far. Best luck this week in Indiana.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Chris Goddard, winner of the Nicklaus and Haskins Award as the best college golfer. How about what Trevor and Davis, to a lesser extent, has had to deal with this past half year?
I suppose they're trying to figure out how to put a positive spin on it, or how the dynamic could become a positive whenever they actually put tees in the ground at Quail Hollow. If you're Davis Love, maybe you're trying to tell your team, you know what, your tour has been under assault all year long. Mm. And even though you kind of win the President's Cup pretty much every year it's held, that this is a chance for you to prove that we are still the best players on the best tour. If you're Davis Love, if you're Trevor Immelman, maybe you're trying to get a little chip on the shoulder of your guy saying, you know what, you've now been cast as the B team, that you're the best we could get.
Right.
And you're not. You're actually the best. Go out there and prove it and try to use it to gin them up a little bit. But it's definitely an awkward situation for Immelman, and it's been made so by duplicity, and that ought to be pointed out. All of these guys said, no, I'm looking forward to playing the President's Cup. Cameron Smith said that 2 weeks ago, that he was going to be there for that, and then suddenly these guys, when the check gets big enough, they all drift away, and the man of his word isn't the man of his word at a certain point, and that's affected Immelman considerably more than it's affected Davis Love to this point.
You feel bad for Trevor, who was so joyful at the announcement of being the captain and being an assistant for Ernie Els in wanting to kind of wrap his arms around this President's Cup when it has not been easy for the international team in good times. You know, 1-11-1, haven't won the thing since 1998. You know, maybe their famous high water mark was a tie in 2003. So they got close in 2019. Looked like they were building momentum and cohesion behind this shield, this black and yellow logo, which Trevor's been, you know, very out front and putting it up on his Twitter page and whatnot. But, man, then you lose the likes of a Cam Smith who's won the century this year, who's won the Players, he's won the Open Championship, you know, tournament records, and was going to be, you know, your Muhammad Ali of this team. He was going to be the guy who, you know, had the biggest knockout punch. He's gone. Abe Ancer had experience. Lou Eustason's been there and done that. Joaquin Niemann, a budding young star in this game. Those are some very, very hard shoes to fill.
Well, you say, you know, Lou Eustason's been there and done that, and Abraham Ancer has experience. That's true, but there's something else he's lost, which is a lot of guys who have institutional knowledge of being losers. And to me, that's an interesting angle here for Trevor Immelman, because he's going to end up with a team that has not been knocked around every 2 years in the President's Cup. I mean, you got to go back 24 years to the international team winning this event. I'm not even sure Trevor Immelman was a professional at that point. And some of the members of his team this time around, like Tom Kim, he wasn't even born at the last time the international team won this event. So what he has lost, yeah, he's lost a lot of great talents. Cam Smith is an absolute loss to his team. You could argue Eustason too. Niemann, yeah, I get all of that. But none of them have positive associations with the President's Cup. Even look like a guy like Mark Leishman, a guy who would be considered a good team player.
Yes.
A losing record in this team format as well. So what
addition
lost,
by subtraction, are you saying? These guys don't have the scars that of losing year after year after year. Are you saying that maybe with this new crop of players, clean slate, Trevor Immelman can be Demi Moore in Ghost, sitting in front of that clay pot, molding the team the way he wants it to be built?
I bet you when Trevor Immelman took this job, he never thought that he would be compared to Demi Moore in Ghost, trying to shape a pot. But I get your point. Totally agree with it. But what he has lost is not all negatives.
Interesting.
And I think if you can clear the memory bank a little bit, yeah, it's hard to deny he's not going with an inferior team, because if the team he was going to bring there was all that good, these guys that are going would have already been there in the top of the rankings. I think he's been betrayed to a certain extent by his team who weren't entirely honest with him the whole way through. I think there was also circumstances that Immelman and nobody else had any control over. This thing kind of accelerated quite quickly during the course of this year, when a lot of people, even on the live side of the fence, would have argued that the point after the playoffs is when they would have expected the situation to really develop. But it accelerated faster. It was out of Immelman's control. All he can do now is bring the best team he has and hope for the best.
They don't have the depth that the American side has, but maybe they have a new rallying cry. They'll need something positive to lean on in Charlotte. Cam Smith met the media outside Boston.
I think there has been, you know, a lot of stuff up in the air over the past month or so. But, you know, for me personally, I'm here to play the best golf I can. Now I'm not only playing for myself, I'm playing for, you know, three of my mates, the other team members. You know, I'm just really excited to be here. This is a new kind of chapter in my life. I think this is the future of golf. I love how it is out here. It's a little bit more laid back on the range and music playing. I love that stuff. I play with music at home, and I just can't wait to be a part of this.
Would you say it was first and foremost, though, a business decision?
Not particularly. I think, yes, it was a business decision as well, but, you know, like Mark said, there's so many positives to come out of this thing. You know, for me, I haven't been back in Australia for 3 years as well. You know, to spend more time at home, you know, not miss it out on, you know, friends and families, weddings, and, you know, a couple of my friends have had kids over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years that I still haven't met. So that's going to be a part of my life that I can't wait to get back. I haven't resigned my membership as on the PGA Tour. I think, yeah, my life has definitely changed over the last, you know, couple of months after the British Open. I've had a few phone calls with players. I've sat down with Jay. We had a good conversation. It has been a little bit different, but this for me was the right decision. You know, I think this is the future of golf. I think it's been the same for a very, very long time, and it needs to be stirred up a little bit. I think this is the future of golf. I think it needs to change, particularly as you know, our golf fans become younger. I think we need to do something to make it exciting for them. I think it was the right move for sure. I think you know, not having those top guys is a little bit of a shame, but hopefully I can see them, you know, four times a year and be able to compete against them and show them I still got it.
Cameron Smith earlier today outside of Boston, now a LIV golfer. Your thoughts on what he said? Wants the laid-back vibe, likes the music, thinks that golf needed to change, and this is the answer.
Yeah, it's kind of odd to hear a guy justify his decision by saying that he likes listening to music while warming up, because you see plenty of guys on the PGA Tour wearing headphones out there as well. And even his stated reason that he wanted to spend more time at home, which we hear from all of these guys, the international schedule that LIV Golf is putting together doesn't actually permit an awful lot of staying at home. And this idea that he hasn't seen family and friends for several years, fair enough, but that's the fault of the pandemic and the inability to get in and out of Australia because of their laws. It's not a thing to do with the PGA Tour at all. And this idea that you can cast what is essentially a personal decision, a personal choice, and recast it as being about the future of golf. I mean, we've seen what the tournaments look like. We've seen the level of interest that the top players have brought to it, which frankly hasn't been that impressive. It's barely a member guest hit and giggle attitude that's out there. So it may be Cameron Smith's future. It's awfully ambitious to suggest that it's the future of golf.
I'm surprised that he would give up that possibility of mixing it up and you know, solving the riddle of TPC Sawgrass and the Players' Championship, or the 36-hole duel that he had alongside John Rahm on the way to that win on Maui at 34 under par for this style of golf, which is different. 54 holes, a shotgun start, you know, lesser golf courses on the hole. It just, as a competitor, where do you find that fire, that anxiety?
I was struck even this morning that Gary Player, who is sponsored by Golf Saudi, criticised Cameron Smith for making the decision he has, because this idea that he's given up legacy, that he's given up serious competition against serious players, players who are invested in it because they're still hungry for it, rather than essentially playing out the string of a career, which has been what so many of the guys who have signed with LIV are doing. Cam Smith doesn't fit that picture. He's a guy who's at the top of his game. He represents the biggest coup that LIV Golf has accomplished so far. But when you have a guy like Gary Player saying that it doesn't bode well for Cameron Smith's future competitively, then you start to wonder about the decision he made. But obviously the money is a significant factor in that.
Yeah, Paul McGinley said that as well, finding competitive sharpness to win multiple major championships. Now, another of the six players who joined LIV this week is Harold Varner III. He addressed the media earlier today.
But the last 24 hours, what has it been like for you?
It sucked. Who likes to be hated? Like, it's terrible. I hate being hated. I'd rather not even be known than be hated. So, yeah, it was terrible.
You jumped into this knowing that you probably, A, may likely never play in a major again. B, you may or may not get world ranking points here again. C, you'll never play on a PGA Tour event again. All those are possible. You were comfortable with all that?
At the start, I was not. Once again, I sat there and I was like, I mean, I went to college and I didn't even know what the USAM was. So, like, golf's never been a way for me to get my name on a trophy. It was a way for me to get out. Like, I played golf so I could go to college. Like, I would not have been able to go to college without playing golf. And then I turned pro because my brain wasn't smart enough to work a 9-to-5 and still make the same amount of money. And the only thing that sucks about golf sometimes is that most of the people that are in golf will never understand it. My kid will never understand it. I'm going to make sure of that. So yeah, you know, like, I'm okay with it. Like, it is what it is. Like, I can't hate on what situation I'm in or what situation I'm not in. I can only do what's best for me at the time from experience I've had as a kid. And I'm actually super proud that I made a decision based off of what I believe in. I think it's very easy to get in a situation where you do what everyone else says you should do, you know.
Harold Varner III, I'd say praised relative to the other players who have gone to live on social media, seen as more transparent, honest about the generational wealth that this decision provides. Are you comfortable with that?
He was certainly praised and ought to be, I suppose, relative to the other guys who went before him who've not even acknowledged that really it was money driving it. But Harold, there is confusion being criticised with being hated. And it's fine if somebody makes a decision where their life in golf was about the opportunity it provided rather than the pursuit of trophies, or if their decision is motivated purely by money.
Yeah.
That's fine, but let's not pretend that this decision is the difference between Harold Varner being in poverty and Harold Varner being secure. He's made more than $10 million on the PGA Tour right now, and he's acting as though the reason that he's being criticised is because he's walking away from the PGA Tour, or he's walking away from serious competition, or he made a decision based purely on money. That's not why Harold Varner is being criticised. It's what he's willing to do for the money that matters, which is be a prop for the Saudi government and its oppression of human rights and beheading its critics with bone saws. That's why Harold Varner is being criticised, not because he chose money over competition or legacy or anything else.
Are you surprised that so many of these golfers are Taylor Gooch, Harold, you know, I'm just a golfer. Like, they're not looking more closely at some of these issues that have brought this criticism about, because it just seems like these guys go up there one by one, whether it's GMAC or HV3. Hey, I'm just here to, you know, I'm growing the game. I'm just, you know, I'm just a golfer.
I'm not surprised. It's a trait that many people have blind spots in life, and it doesn't really interest them. I get that. They can't be ignorant of the conversation that's going on around. They're certainly acting like it, but we've also seen the contracts of Taylor Gooch and Hudson Swafford entered into the court record as part of their restraining order that failed last month. And that's a pretty stringent requirement. They're not allowed to give interviews unless it's approved. There are certain things that they are not allowed to say. And essentially, they're being paid by Greg Norman to be finger puppets for MBS. And they're all going to sit there on a stage. And they always do group press conferences at LIV. You never see a guy sitting up there facing questions on his own. There's always somebody else sitting beside him to nod along in agreement and offer moral support. And in Varner's case there, it was Bubba Watson sitting beside him doing it. That's how they operate. They are paid to be finger puppets, and they're happy to do it.
In Cameron Smith's case, it was Mark Leishman, the fellow Aussie. And interesting how these players have talked about wanting to spend more time with family, see some folks, friends you haven't seen for several years. Well, these guys are going to be busy. Massachusetts, Illinois, Thailand, Saudi Arabia, in Florida, all before Halloween.